California continues to struggle with two major issues, water and marijuana, and then there are other places where those two issues intersect. Outdoor marijuana grows in California have a greater impact on water supplies over time. Pot needs water, and the growers are not terribly shy about getting it, even if it means taking much or all of the water out of a stream. Then there's the stuff that gets dumped back into stream beds. California regional water quality authorities are making moves to address the pot and water issue. The region known best for marijuana growing is, of course, the North Coast, where the process is moving along at the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, where Matt St. John is the executive officer, and he's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Matt, welcome.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me on.
So how big an area is your board responsible for?
The North Coast Regional Board essentially covers the part of California, Northern California, from the Russian River watershed north to the Oregon border, and all the rivers and streams that drain to the ocean within that geographic area.
So that's from, was that Mendocino County on north?
So it's essentially Sonoma County, mm-hmm. Mendocino County, Humboldt County, Del Norte, Siskiyou, and then parts of Modoc.
Whew, that is a big, big area to deal with.
It's a big part of the Northern California, yeah.
So give us an idea of the problems you're running into with pot growers. I mean, we gave the thumbnail description, but you can provide some greater detail here.
Well, your description of the impacts from the water use were right on point. In addition, we see other water quality impacts. First of all, there's just the site development work, so conversions of forest land, cutting down trees to put in grow pads, put in bulldozing in new roads. So it's all the earth movement that's associated with developing a site, both for the roads and grow pads. So big part of the impact is simply dirt getting into streams, removal of riparian vegetation along streams, in some cases filling in of wetlands. Those impacts can you know, too much dirt in streams isn't good. I mean, just to break it down, isn't good for aquatic life and particularly fish. There's also impacts due to use of fertilizers and other types of soil amendments. Those can get nutrients in the water, which can cause impacts to, you know, too much nutrients can cause aquatic growth, algae, which can depress dissolved oxygen levels, which can be harmful to fish. Can also get into groundwater, and problems with too much nitrogen can not be good for drinking water supply. And then there's definitely incidents of use of various types of pesticides, including in some of the, you know, larger grows on public lands, incidents of using banned pesticides that for killing rodents that can have really significant severe impacts to wildlife. So dirt, nutrients, and pesticides are the types of water quality problems that we are seeing throughout the North Coast, in addition to the big impacts from water consumption and water use that you described.
Well, the dirt part is one I hadn't even thought about. So it sounds like even if they weren't taking any water out of the streams or putting anything bad in, they're still going to be disturbing the riparian zones and potentially adding to turbidity in the water.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, in the North Coast, you know, since the passage of the Compassionate Use Act, you know, we've seen just a true ballooning in terms of the number of grow operations. It started with my agency getting complaints associated with environmental impacts associated with these operations. And so at first it was we were dealing with it very much on a response basis. But then the quantity or the scale of it just really continued to come at us, to the point where we recognized that we needed to have a whole program devoted to addressing these environmental impacts. And so that's what we now have. We're teaming with our sister agencies. So it's the State Water Resources Control Board's Office of Enforcement, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, are two key partners, but we're also working with CAL FIRE and the federal agencies, National Marine Fisheries Service, and the U.S. Forest Service, to address the impacts that we're seeing. What we have now is we have out for public review a permit. There's a couple of different words that we use for it, but it's essentially it's a permit to address the water quality and water consumption related impacts from cultivation. I want to be clear that this is not a permit to grow marijuana. What it is is a permit to protect water quality if and where marijuana is being cultivated. So we're not addressing in any way the legal or non-legal status of the cultivation of marijuana. From my agency's standpoint, it doesn't matter if it's marijuana being grown or tomatoes or strawberries. If there's a water quality impact associated with the cultivation of a crop, we need to protect water quality. And so that's what this regulatory program is establishing.
Matt St. John's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, executive officer at the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board in California. We're talking about a move by this and other regional boards to make moves to curtail the impacts from marijuana grows outdoors on water quality and water supply, for that matter, too. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join us on the Jefferson Exchange by phone, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So I've often wondered about that particular part of it. I mean, you're not really asking questions of whether it's legal or not, whether it is medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. One is legal in California, the other is not. But you're just essentially being agnostic, it sounds like, in the approach, saying, okay, whatever you're doing, we just want to make sure the water comes out okay.
Well, that's exactly right. For my agency's responsibility and authority is for protecting surface and groundwater quality to support all the uses of water. So that includes domestic water supplies, includes agricultural water supplies, it includes all the various uses associated with aquatic life and fisheries. So, you know, we are not, first, a couple points. We're not law enforcement. I can't have my staff being asked and make a determination, is this a medical marijuana? Is this a grow that's under the guise of medical marijuana, or is it or not? What we're looking at is, are the practices being done in a manner that is going to keep the watersheds and streams clean to support all the different uses of water?
And so this could potentially put some of the staff in some interesting positions, though. I mean, because they're not law enforcement, but they could certainly be construed as, well, as what they are, government agents. I mean, they are agents of a government agency coming out there. I mean, so are you working with guidelines about how to approach and that sort of stuff?
Well, my staff safety is one of, you know, is of utmost importance. We have partners with other agencies that do wear badges and carry guns, particularly, you know, wardens of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. There are instances where we work with county law enforcement as well as federal agents when there's an identified grow or single grow operation or multiple grow operations within a watershed where we have information that indicates that there's some environmental harm that's happening. Often that's based on, you know, anecdotal information or some aerial reconnaissance that we do. We use information that we get from Google imagery as well as other tools to identify areas where there's impacts. And in those cases, we're working with our agency partners, including law enforcement, to go in, get search warrants, then law enforcement, you know, secures the site, and then my staff and the other environmental and wildlife agencies come in and do an assessment of the water, of the environmental potential environmental impacts. And you know, another key component of our program, in addition to the regulatory program, and working with our agency partners, is taking strict enforcement action. So by having a regulatory program, it essentially establishes thresholds or establishes a bar of, you know, what are the basic protections, environmental protections that need to be in place. And when they're not followed and there's environmental damage that's happening or a party is not choosing to work with us, then we're going to take, and we are taking, enforcement action. And there's various, you know, there's a whole range in the types of enforcement actions that we can take. But in there, in some cases, we're issuing civil penalties that, you know, we're getting, there's financial penalties that need to be paid in addition to cleaning up and restoring the environmental damage that's happening. So in addition to regulation, we do have a strong component, which is enforcement. And that's really important because while we need to have both carrots and sticks, and so this program very much does have a stick component of in order to protect the environment.
We're talking about marijuana and water and the use of water for growing marijuana outdoors in California and efforts to regulate that to preserve water quality. Matt St. John's the executive officer at the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. A couple of emails here. David writes, new Siskiyou County regulations change the number of plants from 99 down to 6, 12, and at most 24, depending on acreage. I'm not sure what he's saying here. Many grows divert the water, leave plastic garbage, and pollute with rat poison and such. And Siskiyou County has made a good step to bring it into balance. You mentioned Siskiyou is one of the counties in the jurisdiction of the North Coast Regional Board. Is that fairly typical that county by county you're getting some efforts to regulate?
Well, the emailer is definitely, I mean, brings up a good point that there are county ordinances throughout the North Coast region that establish various types of limits, and we have a requirement in our regulatory program that they need to be complying with any other local or state regulation or ordinance. So ours does not supersede. It simply says you need to comply with the local ordinances and limits as well. We do establish this permit addresses any grow that has 6 or more mature plants or 12 or more immature plants. In other words, for grows that are less than that, we're not attempting to. This program does not address them, but so we believe that we're very consistent with the local ordinances that do establish limits in terms of the number of plants on a site.
Matt, are you dealing with water rights at all, or is this strictly a water quality issue? I mean, if somebody's taking water out of a stream and don't have any legal right to do so, is that something you address too?
Well, it does, and I mean, it's a yes and no answer. So my agency is the Water Quality Control Board, and so we do not have regulatory authority on water rights. It's our, essentially what I refer to as our parent organization, the State Water Resources Control Board, and their Division of Water Rights that oversees water rights. Now, but that doesn't mean that our permit doesn't have requirements associated with water consumption and the use of water and how much water is used. This is a what we call a tiered program, and the lower tier is tier one is what we refer to as the low threat tier. And in order for an operation to fall under that lower threat tier, they cannot divert water, even if they have a riparian right. They cannot divert water during the summer season from May 15th through October. So if an operation is on more level ground, if they're smaller in size, if their operations are away from a water course, and they're not diverting water during the summer season, then they're eligible for this lower threat tier. They still have to meet minimum water quality protections and water conservation, implement water conservation practices, and they have to be able to demonstrate that they're complying with those conditions, but there's less monitoring and reporting. If they don't meet those site conditions of this lower threat tier, then they're in a second tier, a tier two, and it's more of the active management tier. They have to develop a site-specific water resources protection plan that's similar to, you know, a farm or ranch water quality plan that other sectors of agriculture develop with the help of organizations like the National Resource Conservation Service, as an example. That's the more active management tier. And then the third tier is our cleanup and restoration tier. That's a tier where there's been some site damage that's occurred. They've put in a stream crossing that's resulted in fill of a creek. They've removed riparian vegetation. They've put in a storage pond without any proper engineering, and there's active ongoing erosion. Those are sites where there's environmental damage that needs to be addressed. They have to develop a site cleanup and restoration plan that has to be prepared by a licensed professional, an engineer or a geologist. They have to submit that to us for my approval and then implement the cleanup and restoration activities.
All right, so tier three, the most serious level for sure.
Yep.
We have a couple more comments here from email. Adam writes, pot growers are familiar with being vilified. I acknowledge that there are rogue growers who need to be brought into regulation, but their impacts on California water pale compared with rice and almonds. The water usage for pot is steep, but the young industry has not yet established a track record to accurately assess real impact. I don't want to say apples and oranges, but it certainly is pot and almonds, I guess, we're talking about here, about water impacts. I mean, do we have an idea of how much water is withdrawn from marijuana over the course of a season?
You know, the records are quite variable. What I've seen referenced is from a Department of Fish and Wildlife study, which actually was based on some medical marijuana industry literature, that cites up to 6 gallons per plant per day. That's a lot of water.
Yeah, that really
now,
is.
Now, less. I've also been told that it doesn't have to take that much water. But you know, it's a true kind of cumulative impact where you have, you know, some amount of water that's used, added up all the plants in a watershed, and it can, you know, truly result in dewatering of streams. And with that said, I mean, we're not trying to say that marijuana uses the same amount of water as other crops. So I think it's a fact that there's other crops growing in California that are more thirsty.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean that water conservation and restrictions on water use shouldn't be implemented for this activity.
All right, let's take another call. Here's Clyde in Applegate. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Matt St. John. Clyde, you there? Okay, Clyde is not there. Let us go to Elizabeth in Arcata. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I keep thinking that we should have, the marijuana growers should agree to create an organic cultivation standard and because it's being used as a medicine. And I hear sites, grow sites, having to be cleaned up of trash and poisons and all kinds of chemicals. And not only does it go in the water table, but for the bees, I don't know if bees go around marijuana plants or not, but
But it certainly impacts. So you're looking for an organic standard. And is there any discussion about anything like that, Matt St. John, that you're aware of?
So it's certainly not something that my agency oversees, but it is my understanding that there is a certification program for cultivation of marijuana, which is I'm not sure if it's actually an organic certification or not, but it is my understanding that there is such a certification.
Okay, we have another email here from Stephen in Eugene. He says, since growing medical marijuana is a private activity which must receive some discretionary approval, meaning that the agency has the authority to deny the requested permit or approval from a government agency, why not just regulate it under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, or is that what Matt is doing?
Well, so, I mean, CEQA applies to any regulatory program that, my agency develops. So we are, we're developing an, we have developed an environmental document under CEQA that's a companion to this permit. But CEQA compliance in itself isn't enough moving forward. And so this is really about moving forward for cultivators to come into compliance with this regulatory program.
So given where we are in the year, are we not likely to have a set of regulations or a process set up until the end of this year's growing season?
That's correct. So we're currently out in a 30-day public review period. The public comment period closes on June 8th. I encourage anybody to go to our website at www.waterboards.com/North Coast, and from our homepage you can get to the links associated with this marijuana permit. The public comment period closes on June 8th. We are then scheduled to be heard before our board. We're an agency that's governed by board members, and that will be at our August board meeting. The permit will go into place this fall.
All right. We'll try to make sure that we can provide a link on our webpage as directly as we can to the comment section of the website for waterboards.com/North Coast. Matt St. John is the executive officer at the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. Thanks so much for talking to us about marijuana and water today.
Thank you for your interest, Jeff.
All right.
You.
Take care.